Twitchell's Book One, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D. L. White. Chapter 25. Net Work. When they got back, Elf wasted no time in taking Cece out for a walk. She didn't bother with goodbyes. James didn't seem to mind at all that they hadn't got their hands on any passports. He was just happy to be feeling a tiny bit better. He'd made it out of bed and was sitting at the kitchen table, wrapped in a blanket, with the chess set out in front of him. Squeeze test. Jenny held out her hand. James took it. Tell me when you started squeezing, Jenny said. Hey, James said. You know I already started. True, you're not a ghost anymore, but you're nowhere near better. Nick sat down opposite James. How long's it normally take before you're back to full strength? James let go of Jenny's hand and stared at the chessboard. Never taken more than a couple of hours before. I guess the Stone of Brighthelm was really helping. Hope nothing else gets put up for auction. Nick took his laptop out and plugged in the charger. Let me check something, he said. He opened a connection to Twitchell's SSTag geolocator server and pulled up the logs. It took him a few minutes to figure out how, but he managed to feed the logs back into the client so he could browse a single ID badge location over time. Gah, he said. I figured Collier was the prime suspect for stealing the stone, but his badge has barely left his room for weeks. No surprises there, Jenny said. I mean, he knows we must have access to the data, so why would he take his badge anywhere? Getting to the stone isn't easy, James said. Maybe that's why he's been so quiet and not been coming after us. That, and because Jenny threw him into the dew pond, Nick said. If it was him that stole the stone, Jenny said, then it would be a good idea to discourage him from trying to steal any more magical items from around town. Not that I can think of many more, but if he found out about the Stone of Brighthelm, then he might have his eye on something else. Something we don't know about. Removing the magic that revives me is practically murder, James said. Or manslaughter, even if he doesn't know what he's doing, which it sounds like he doesn't. He pointed at the chessboard. Fancy a game? Nick nodded. I'm going to grab a few things for dinner, Jenny said. I'll help, Nick said. No, you stay and keep James's brain active. My brain's fine, thanks, James said, but Nick needs the practice. I'll be white. Nick set up the black pieces, and by the time James had beaten him twice, Jenny was back from the little supermarket with soup and bread. Anyone seen Elf? She asked, putting the shopping down by the sink. Not back yet, James said. Elf didn't come back all evening. The others ate, talked about how to handle Collier, played more chess. Winner stays on, so James stayed on the whole time until he gracefully retired to let Nick get beaten by Jenny, and eventually went up to bed. Nick thought he heard someone going up the stairs at some point after midnight, but he was too tired to get up and check. Unusually, he wasn't the last one down in the morning. Jenny and James were up already, and Cece was snoozing on his charging laptop, but Elf hadn't appeared. I guess she came back in the night, Nick said, gently nudging the monkey to the side and opening his laptop. Yeah, James said, and she brought these with her. He tossed two dark blue booklets toward Nick. They slid across the table, and when they came to a halt, Nick realized what they were. Passports, he said. Whose? Guess, Jenny said. Nick couldn't remember the names, so he checked his notes from the day before. Mads Jacobson and, he scrolled up to the first hotel. Arne Hansen? Bingo, James said. Two Norwegian passports, ready to go to an address in Albania. How did she do it? Nick shook his head. Must have gone back and retried the same room key trick. Jenny was dressed in lycra shorts and had her bike off the turbo trainer and ready to go by the back door. I hope she didn't get caught on camera. We'll only know that when the police turn up at Twitchell's. Nick wondered if it was worth going back and trying to erase the camera data, but that would put him back at the scene of the crimes. I don't think they'll be able to find Elf, James said. I mean, I'm not really sure whether she even exists on records anymore. How would they trace her? There's a courier near the clock tower in town that opens soon, Jenny said. Give me the address they've got to go to, and I'll send the passports by whatever delivery is fastest. Nick logged into the LCRS forum and found the details in the request they'd reserved. He emailed the address to Jenny. "Is that all we need to do?" she asked. "Yeah." Nick scanned the instructions. "It still marks as pending. Once we got a tracking number from the courier, I can add it to the request and update it as complete. I can't believe we've done one of them." "I'll message you the number," Jenny said. "I'm going out on a long ride, but I'll send these first." She tucked the passports into a small rucksack, then maneuvered the bike out onto the decking. Nick closed the door behind her. "Thanks for doing this," James said. "Closing the door?" "No, getting the passports." "That was Elf," Nick said. "Yeah, but she couldn't have done it without the information you found. I wish I could help more. I feel pretty useless right now." "I guess we're one step closer to the Alchemist," Nick said. "Or will be, once I mark this request as completed." "Let's forget about the Alchemist for the time being. We need to concentrate on the auction," James said. "I want to get the portal book back. And it'd be good to have the Stone of Brighthelm back nearby too." Elf finally woke up at midday. James and Nick were in the middle of a slightly closer than normal game of chess, both concentrating hard. "You feeling any better?" she asked James. "Hang on," he said. Then he moved his queen into the corner. "Check." "Yeah, bit better. Still not right, but I can move about more easily. Thanks for getting those passports. Jenny sent them off an hour ago, and Nick's marked the request as complete."
"You would do the same for me," she shrugged.
Nick dragged his mind away from the now even more unwinnable position. "How did you do it?"
"Same as the plan," Elf said. "But I figured that the passports would definitely be in the room when the owner was also in the room."
"Wait," Nick worked out what she meant. "You went in the room while the Norwegians were in there sleeping?" He couldn't believe it. "What if they'd woken up and found you?"
"They didn't," Elf said, rather matter-of-factly. "But if they had, I'm sure I'd have figured it out."
She feigned a shocked look.
"Oh, I'm so sorry. Reception must have given me the wrong key. I'll go back and sort it out."
Nick stared at her. He had no doubt that her plan would have worked. The Norwegians would probably have been apologizing to her for the fake mistake. But what if they hadn't believed her? What if they got angry?
"Your move," James said.
He wasn't at all worried about Elf. "I mean, it's mate in three regardless of what you do, but I'm happy to play it out." They played it out, and James won 3 moves later.
"I also met up with Claudia last night," Elf said, cradling a freshly made cup of coffee and sitting next to Nick. "Zen and Bobby have signed up to a mercenary task force. They think it might have something to do with the auction, as they're meeting up on Thursday evening in the Westbourne Caverns."
Thursday was the auction.
"Westbourne Caverns," Nick said. "They the ones under Brighton?"
"No, that's Wellsbourne," James said. "The Westbourne's a river in London. There's a whole load of underground rivers under the city, and I'm guessing the Westbourne's near the Albert Hall?"
"Goes right underneath it," Elf said. "Claudia said that the auction doesn't usually use mercenaries. She says it's a pretty big deal and has its own security."
"It'll be good to have Zen and Bobby nearby," James said, "in case we need them."
"I think me and Jenny will be able to handle it," Elf said. "Unless you're back up close to 100%, you should stay behind."
If the rats were in London, Nick was more than happy to stay in Brighton. James didn't share this opinion. "I'll be fine by Thursday," he said. "And if we need a quick portal, it's best that I'm there. Besides, I don't want to miss out on wearing that Dragon Rider outfit you've made for me." Just as Nick was thinking of suggesting a trip to Rook's Bakery, Jenny returned from her cycle with a bag full of bread and cakes. Unlike James, she wasn't so understanding about Elf's nighttime thievery. "I don't like you taking risks all on your own," Jenny said, once she'd heard exactly what Elf had done.
"If I'd told you, you would have tried to stop me," Elf said. "I just saved us time and an argument."
"But at least we'd have known where you were," Jenny said, a slight strain in her voice. "If something had gone wrong..."
"It didn't, and I'm fine."
It looked like Jenny wanted to argue further, but she simply said, "Well, it's done now, and those passports should arrive by tomorrow night. I'm going to shower. You lot get sandwich stuff ready." As always, Rooks did not disappoint. By the end of lunchtime, Jenny was showered, fed, and up to date with the rat's activities. And Elf knew about the plan to confront Collier.
"He won't like it," Elf said, But if it was him that stole the stone, then he needs to be stopped, sooner rather than later. Probably best for me to keep out of it. I'll only annoy him more.
Sooner rather than later meant speaking to Collier that night. This meant just Jenny and Nick, as James still couldn't pass the squeeze test. They would visit Collier at his dorm after dinner. Jenny assured Nick that there was no chance that Collier would try anything. Still, Nick wasn't exactly thrilled with the assignment. "I should have taken care of him before," Jenny said. "I hoped that throwing him into the dew pond would have done the trick. I'm annoyed that I was wrong." In the afternoon, James beat Nick at chess a couple more times, then went for a recovery nap. Nick then spent 3 solid hours testing his theory that the Twitchell's network that he'd hacked into wasn't actually real. His best guess was that it was a virtual network mimicking a physical one. Virtual networks were a normal part of computer infrastructure and used by most organizations. They allowed complex networks to be run from less machines, but with the same functionality. Twitchell's network wasn't set up like a virtual network, though. It had all the features of a physical network, with hardware switches and servers. It felt just like the hardware network that Nick was used to from St. Mark's. After a quick piece of research on the differences between virtual and physical networks, Nick ran a few tests, and all of them came back confirming that the network was real. He ignored the results and kept researching, this time looking specifically for how to tell if you're being tricked into thinking a network is real. He came across a few real-life cases where, to trick attackers, network administrators had created fake versions of their systems. There wasn't too much information on it, because it was more like the sort of thing that a government would do to keep other governments away from their secrets than regular security found on education networks. He was about to give up when he found a recording of a presentation from a hacking conference where a researcher used simple load timing attacks to determine if the environment they were hacking into was real or virtual. Reading through the comments, if someone really wanted, they could make it very difficult indeed to tell the difference. Armed with the idea from the presentation, Nick gave the load timing attacks a try on Twitchell's network. It was, as the researcher had said, very simple. You take 2 normally independent systems, and you put one of them under strain, and then look to see if that affected the other. On a physical network, if one server gets low on memory, that should have no impact on another server's memory management. But if both of those servers were running on the same virtual machine, then one can impact the other, as the virtual host fights to balance memory drainage between the servers. Within minutes, he'd set up an internal web server on the student security server, and by running a proxy script, was testing the response time to retrieve a web page by fetching the same page 10 times every second. Each response time was quick and similar, all 74 or 75 milliseconds. This was not a hard test, as he'd used similar scripts before on a range of hacks. Next, he connected to the student record system, opened the database, and ran a command to select everything from the largest table. The impact on the student record system server was immediate. The memory usage leapt to nearly 100%, and it visibly started lagging. But it was the student security server that held Nick's interest. 2 of the response times hit 80 milliseconds before returning to 74 and 75. He killed the database client, let the database server recover, and then ran the test again. Same result. For a fraction of a second, the other server was impacted, and then it went back to normal. He sat back and stared at the wall behind Elf's sewing machine. Twitchell's network, or at least the one he'd hacked, wasn't real. It was pretending to be real, but it wasn't real. Which meant the only thing it could be was a trap. The best time to visit Collier, in Nick's opinion, was never. The second best time, everyone else agreed, was 9 p.m. that night. Jenny had a couple of goes at drawing the symbols to conjure the portal to Twitchell's. Neither attempt got anywhere near the school, and both ended up at least 100 feet above the forest canopy. "It's a tough one," James said. "It's taken me ages to get as good as I am, and I still can't get it anywhere near the ground." Jenny gave him the quill.
Problem is that the symbol isn't really for Twitchells at all. It's actually for an old village miles away. The bishop came up with the tweaks to push it closer. He composed himself, breathed out, and drew the lines fast and fluid. The nib of the pen barely made a sound against the grain of the paper. Once it had grown to full size, the portal was as high as a basketball hoop, just below the main branch growth. "Take this," he handed the quill to Jenny, who took Nick's hand. "Say hello to Collier from me," he said, as they floated through into the dark forest. "First thing I want to know is whether he's got his eye on any more magical items to steal," Jenny said, tramping fast between the trees. "Then I want to know who's been putting him up to all this." Despite his longer legs, Nick was struggling to keep up with the determined girl. "What if he doesn't want to talk to us?" he said. "He doesn't have a choice." They took the direct approach to making contact. Jenny banged on the C-block door until someone let them in. She pushed past a surprised second year and bounded up the stairs two at a time. "Sorry," Nick said, before hurrying after her. Collier's room was at the end of the second floor landing. Jenny got ready to hammer on his door when it opened. Hector stood there, his solid girth filling the full width of the doorframe. "Move it," Jenny said.
"I was just leaving, actually."
He turned sideways and shuffled out of Jenny's way.
The room wasn't all that much nicer than the dorms in the house. The furniture was a bit shinier, and there was only one bed, no sharing for the rich. But it wasn't luxurious.
"Welcome to my humble lodgings. Please sit."
Collier was sitting on his bed and pointing at two chairs set up near his desk. Hector disappeared down the hallway, and Nick closed the door. It was almost like Collier had been expecting them, which he should have been, because they'd both brought their ID badges with them, unwrapped. He had reverted to the smug confidence he'd worn when he first turned up at the DuPont. "I'll stand, thank you," Jenny said curtly. One of Collier's chairs was a high-end gamer seat that was popular with YouTubers. Nick sat in it and rocked it backwards. It reminded him of the car that had brought him to Twitchell's. He spun round slowly and eyeballed Collier's laptop, big and powerful, though perhaps not quite as high-spec as Nick's. It was plugged into a huge monitor with a wireless keyboard and mouse in front of it.
"Comfy, yes?" Collier said. "Italian leather. The best."
"We're not here to talk about seats," Jenny said. "We're here to make sure you stop stealing any more magical items." Collier looked shocked for a second.
"I can assure you, I'm no thief."
"What about the Stone of Brighthelm?" Jenny said.
"That thing was not easy to find," Collier said. "I can't believe how deep that pond went. Why do you care so much about these things, I wonder?"
"Because they belong to my town, and I don't want people like you stealing them for money. Who did you take them to?"
"I told you before, I don't know these people. I fulfill requests, and I have no more plans to find any other objects."
"Good, because if anything else suddenly goes missing, I'll make sure that you won't be lifting anything heavier than a pencil until after Christmas."
"Is that a threat?"
Collier raised his eyebrows.
"Yes." "Well, you don't need to worry about that. I've done what I needed to do. Is that everything?"
Nick had expected a little more resistance, and he'd half hoped that Jenny would have to use force. But Collier was clearly not interested in fighting. He seemed totally in control of the situation. Something about him fulfilling requests from people he didn't know suddenly made sense. "You're on LCRS, aren't you?" Nick guessed. "Or another one of the Alchemist's servers." Collier paused, then ditched his laid-back tone.
"Enough chat. Time for you to leave."
"You know the caretaker's been tracking you," Nick said, talking through a train of thought that he believed was probably true. "She knows everything that happens here. There's no way she hasn't hacked your satellite connection."
"I don't think so," Collier said. "It's military grade. Unhackable."
"Nothing's unhackable," Nick said. "The Alchemist won't be happy to learn that one of his gang has been compromised."
"I have not been compromised," Collier said, "and I don't believe you can contact the Alchemist. I want you out of my room."
He rose from the bed. Jenny took a step toward him, and he sat back down.
"Please, this has taken years. Don't mess it up now."
"What has taken years?" Jenny said. Because Nick's right. After this, we'll be going straight to the caretaker with what we've learned. I think she'll be very interested in examining that laptop of yours. Nick had to hold back a smile. Jenny knew just how to make Collier squirm. Collier looked from Jenny to Nick.
You can't. The caretaker will kick all of us out if she finds out, not just me.
I don't even belong here, Nick said. I'm just a poor scholar, remember? Besides, I'll be fine back in Luton. More than fine. And the inspector placed me and James and Elf here at Twitchell's, Jenny said. Doesn't matter what the caretaker said. We're not here just because we make the school money. Collier shook his head.
You need to go.
Not before you show me how you access the ID badge tracking data, Nick said. And I want to see your LCRS account too. There's something I need to check.
No way. Uncle Vadik will kill me if he finds out.
And what will he do to you if you get kicked out of here? Jenny said. And think about what the alchemist might do to a traitor. It's up to you. Answer our questions and we won't tell anyone else about this. The man-boy looked desperate, but it was clear he had no choice.
I show you and you leave, he said quietly. That's it. I show you and you leave.
This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.